This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
I'm confident that every person who's experienced Toastmasters would definitely say the encounter has paid off for them in one way or another. And for one person, this experience combined with the knowledge of trivia has turned that into cool, hard cash. Ryan, who are we speaking to today? Who is our special guest?
Distinguished Toastmaster Dennis Chase is our guest today. Dennis works as a senior project manager for biotech company Genentech in South San Francisco, California. A Toastmaster for 10 years, he's a member of the company's corporate club, Genentech Toastmasters Club. In April 2021, Dennis appeared on the popular television game show Jeopardy. The September 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine featured Dennis's story in an article titled "Jeopardy Trivia Buff Credits Toastmasters for Game Show Win." Distinguished Toastmaster Dennis Chase, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, Dennis, first of all, congratulations on your incredible feat, getting to the Jeopardy stage and winning money. I think that's awesome. I'm sure that many of us have had the dream of being on the game show and, of course, even more so wanting to win. And we also know that the odds of just getting on the show are absolutely incredible. Now, for listeners who may not be familiar with Jeopardy, could you just perhaps provide a tiny, tiny brief overview of the format of the show? But then we really want to know, what was that experience like for you?
Sure. Jeopardy is a hosted game show. You have somebody standing behind a lectern, and there's a big board, and they give you clues. However, Jeopardy kind of flips the average game show on the end, and that they give you an answer. This is a Canadian prairie province, and then you have to answer in the form of a question. It could be, what is Alberta? One of the most important things on the show is to remember you always have to give your answers in the form of a question. For there are two rounds and then a final round. Each round you have six categories. One of the questions I get asked most often is, they tell you the name of the categories ahead of time, right? And the answer is no. You have six categories each round. You have no idea what they're going to be, no idea what clues they're going to provide. So it helps to know a little bit about a lot of things. It actually is a lot of fun to be on the show. They treat you very nicely. I was trying to keep my calmness and composure to answer as many questions as I could. So if it doesn't look like I'm having fun on the show, well, that's a bit of a mistake because I was having fun. But there is a lot of pressure. You want to be able to walk away and say you're a Jeopardy champion, which very few people in the world can say that they are. And it was definitely worth trying out for 30 years to get on the show.
Well, you just mentioned 30 years, Dennis. That is a long time. Have you actually been actively pursuing the goal for 30 years, or have you just simply been a fan for 30 years and at some point you said, I think I'd like to try to get on the show?
I've been pretty actively pursuing it. I did take off a couple of years. I had a serious illness way back. You know, that wasn't my highest priority. But usually every time I could take the test, I would take the test. And it used to be that if you knew you were going to be in the Los Angeles area, you could just call up the office and say, hey, I'm going to be, you know, here this week. Do you have any auditions? So you could just kind of drop in and take the test. And when you take the test, you take a written test with 50 questions. And then if you pass that, you have like an interview test where you play the game and they see how you do and what your personality is like, just like every other game show on earth. So the first time I did that, I walked in Los Angeles in 1990. So that was pretty much 30 years ago. And they went to the online test format a few years ago. So every time that came up, I would take the online test. During Zoom, it's a little bit more internet focused. I think for this appearance, I took four online tests and I probably had three Zoom interviews before they said, okay, you know, you're going into our pool. If your number comes up, you'll be on the show. If it doesn't, try again next time. It's something I've heard more than 25 times.
Wow. Dennis, as I mentioned, the title of the article in the September 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine says that you credit Toastmasters for your game show win. So please tell us, how did your Toastmasters experience help you? Well, let's just say even reach the set of Jeopardy, never mind win.
Yeah. No, that's exactly an accurate assessment. There's a couple of things that I think would help any Toastmaster when they're trying out for a game show. First of all, I'd like to think that Toastmasters helps us sparkle and be prepared and present ourselves in the best way, because you absolutely have to sparkle and stand out and be eloquent and give them something interesting to look at in the interview process. And I think I had at least three interviews for this round. So that's the first thing that helps, being able to present yourself well. Fast recall is so important on a game show. If you ring the buzzer and you try to answer and the answer isn't there, you've lost money. Speakers in particular are able to pull facts from the back of their mind or think of something to cover those pauses, and that really helps. Plus, if you ever watch the Jeopardy game show, there's a story element. You give these topics to the host, and they can pick any one of three of them to walk over and say, so as Aaron Rodgers said to me, so tell me about your time doing AIDS education in South Africa. So I had to have that story pretty well prepared or be able to speak for 30 to 45 seconds on it, which is basically a table topic session.
With the advantage of, you know, it's going to be one of three
topics, but sometimes the host changes it up and doesn't tell you ahead of time. Mm. But yeah, I can hold three different table topic speeches in my head at the same time. That's not a problem. That's Toastmasters experience.
That's pretty awesome. Dennis, I'm really curious, once you knew you were going to be a contestant, what was the preparation process like for you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because to try and make it, I think, fair for everybody, the Jeopardy people only call 3 weeks in advance. So I only had 3 weeks to prepare. Now, one could say I'd been preparing all my life for the show, being in trivia contests and things like that. But one of the ways that you can prepare is to simulate the experience, just like you might do if you were a contestant in the World Championship of Public Speaking. When I watch the show at home, I have a ballpoint pen in my hand, and I'm clicking in just like I would be clicking the buzzer. Plus, I am standing, which you would do on the show, and I have lights in my face, which, let me tell you, there are a lot of on the show. A lot of lights and six cameras in your face. That's just the simulation of the experience itself. But for any game show, the best preparation is to watch the show. There's a particular cadence to the questions. There's a particular style to the questions. You also, when you watch the show, you get to know which categories you're good at, which you don't need to study, and which categories you're not so good at, which you do need to study. Not being a sports aficionado, I know you need to study those, but you know, there's no way I'm going to learn all of the soccer or football or rugby statistics overnight. So one of the things I did do, for example, was learn what the trophies are in each type of sport and who the most recent winner of, say, the World Cup and the World Series and the NHL Stanley Cup was for the last couple of years. So definitely watch the show and study your weaker categories. I work in the sciences. I didn't study math or science. I figured I had that down.
Sometimes you get lucky and you just get the category that you know everything about.
Exactly. And sometimes you don't.
Now, having this been the first time to the Jeopardy stage, you may not have been familiar with what happens in the background, but I'm actually curious that because of the pandemic or the current situation, do you know how that was impacting the interview and the filming process?
Well, it definitely impacted the interview process. Since I now live in Southern California, what they probably would have done is had me come in-person interview rather than interviews over Zoom. It absolutely impacted the contestant pool as well, because I filmed back in February of 2020, and that's when we were really in the depths of the worst of the pandemic, hopefully the worst of the pandemic. So they were only accepting contestants from within driving distance. We were basically talking California, Western Nevada, and Southern Oregon. Oh, which meant that people who lived in that area, their chances suddenly went up. So I kind of figured, okay, this is my best chance to get on, and it was. So that's how it affected things. When you're on the set, you are double masked. Or I was double masked. You had to at least have a single mask at all times. The only exception was when you were behind the lectern during a rehearsal or during the actual filming of the show, and when you were eating. So I was there, believe it or not, for 13 hours the first day that I taped, with a mask on the whole time. And, you know, every 30 seconds, it seemed like somebody was giving you hand sanitizer. And we kept social distance from each other, the other 10 contestants, at all times. So there were pretty strict protocols. When you're at rehearsal, they bring a team of three people up to practice with the buzzer and get used to the cameras and the lights. Between every set of three people, they sprayed down all of the lecterns and the whole stage area. So, you know, that's, I felt very secure in the precautions that they were taking to keep everybody as safe as possible.
One less thing to worry about, because, of course, the questions, being able to answer the questions is certainly on your mind. I'm just also curious, very quickly, how long was it between the actual recording and when the episode aired?
I recorded the third week in February, and they aired the first week in April. That's, about a month and a half.
That's pretty quick, actually.
The question that I always get asked, too, is, so you got your money right after they taped the show, right? And the answer is no. I got my money 90 days after the show aired in April, so the first week in July. For that, one of the reasons for that is that there are advertisers on the show who retain the right to see their ad on the air before they send in the money that supports the show. So they get to see it on the air, then they get to get their accounting systems in place. So that's one of the reasons why it takes 90 days after the show airs to get your money.
Well, you heard that first here on the Toastmasters podcast. I never knew that.
Well, Dennis, you've given us some behind the scenes here of the Jeopardy experience, but this is going to be maybe a little bit esoteric. I'd like to get another layer of the behind the scenes. You know, I often think of the concept that when I give a speech, there are two speeches that I give, particularly if it's a speech I'm have some nerves to give. There's the speech the audience sees and hears, and then there's the dialogue I have with myself during the entire speech. Of, oh, that went over well. Or, oh, that wait, what's that person doing? Is my fly down? Can you give us a look at the internal state of Dennis Chase on the set during this stage? What was going through your mind? How were you experiencing nerves? And if so, how were you processing and dealing with them?
I was a little nervous, but a little nervous keeps you on your toes. I have given a few seminars on speech anxiety, and I tell people, you know, nervousness and queasiness, those are symptoms. They're not death sentences. So once you recognize those symptoms, you can do something about it. Like, for example, before an interview, I often have cold, sweaty palms. So I keep them in my pocket where they get all warm and toasty and dry. And there, that symptom doesn't demonstrate itself. But yeah, you are a little nervous. You're always thinking, you know, where am I going next? If I get this one right, did I get it right? If I got it wrong, oh, bad. One of the things that helps you focus, because focus is really, really important. I wasn't even looking at the host. I was looking at the board. Is to not pay attention to the score. The score is actually located above the cameras, so you kind of have to look to the left and up to see it. All of the champions who have put out books say, don't look at the score. You have no control over the score until it comes to a daily double anyway. For those of you who don't know the show, that's where you can bet any amount of money that you have on one question. So that helped me a lot. I didn't even look at the score. So I wasn't nervous about the score because there's not much you can do about it. You can answer questions. That's about it. But you'll see on the show, and I think I did this too, when somebody hits a daily double, one of the first things they'll do is look up and to the left. And it's like, oh, that's what the score is. Because knowing what the score is very important to knowing how much you want to wager on a daily double. The first game is the one where you're really nervous about how you're going to do. And I didn't realize how much I was ahead until it came to the second daily double, which is, I think, 99% of the way through the game. And I looked at that score and I said, oh my God, I could win this in a runaway. So I had to bet very carefully. And when they went to that commercial break, I had to do some deep breathing because I was like, this has taken 30 years to get on the show, and now I'm going to be a champion. So I was fairly emotional, but I tried not to show that. Mm-hmm. Just kind of sat there at the lectern, and I took some deep breaths. And I remember consciously saying to myself, remember this moment, because it's never going to come again, and it's really, really special. There's real camaraderie between the contestants. You know, nobody's like, "Oh, I'm going to get you." You know, you're going down. Everybody's really supportive, and I also started thinking, "Oh, I felt bad for the other contestants, Pasquale and Jennifer, because I did win by quite a margin." But you know, that's the chance that you take when you get on. You could be one and done. You could get there and not win, but still have a great experience by meeting all these people and being on national television. Hello. So you are a little nervous. I think Toastmasters helps in this regard. Plus, I've done a lot of stage work. Having a stage presence where even if you are a little nervous, that it doesn't show and you can keep your focus. That focus is so important.
You know what? For a moment, I was there. I was there with you. I mean, I was just absorbing it. I was seeing the lights in my eyes. Excellent storytelling tactics. I'm just curious, Dennis, are there any other specific Toastmaster skills that you could make reference to that you used while you were there?
I think I mentioned the deep breathing. That's not specifically a Toastmaster skill. It's kind of like an anxiety skill. But, you know, to keep yourself from being anxious, to keep yourself in control, deep breathing really helps. I did do some visualization and practicing for the show. Like I said, at home, I would have a clicker in my hand. I would have the lights in my face. I would be standing so I could visualize what it would feel like to be on the show and maybe not get as nervous that way. I tried to appear eloquent when I told my stories and think about what I was going to say ahead of time. I'm a big believer in controlling what you can control. So I had my outfits for the show picked out more than 2 weeks in advance because you are appearing on national television. I wanted to show that I actually thought about what I wore. You know, it's like when I tell people when I guide them on their speeches, it's okay to put your hands in a pocket during a speech as long as that's a choice and not a default. So I didn't want to have any defaults where I was doing particular tics or doing particular things that I wasn't choosing. So to me, it was about making choices too, which is one of the things that I think Toastmasters has helped teach me.
Wow.
You should have the attitude of it's going to be fun, because it actually was. So if you go into the experience saying it's going to be fun, I'm going to show that fun in my voice, I'm going to show that in my face, then I think you'll come across really great. And you know, the same thing about doing a speech. If you approach a speech as, oh my God, this is horrible, I'm going to do horribly, well, it might be true. But if you approach it as this is going to be fun, and I'm going to let people into a different aspect of myself and maybe teach them something, I think the chances that you'll do fun and have fun and do well go up. And same thing with appearing on a game show. Go into it that it's going to be fun. Hey, you walked in the door with nothing. You leave with at least $1,000. So there's a gain right there.
Right. That's great.
Excellent. Yeah, it's great that you have the Toastmaster skills rather than being on the set of Jeopardy and doing your icebreaker. Dennis, let's shift gears just a little bit. On the show, you shared with the guest host, Aaron Rodgers, he's an American football player, and of course the audience, about some celebrities that you're related to through a common ancestor. Could you please share with us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my mother and my uncle, who unfortunately both have passed, did some research through my mother's line and found out that we are related to Governor William Bradford, who came over on the Mayflower with the Pilgrims. And that was all well and good. We were fine with just being related to Governor Bradford. But I think it was just this year, I said, there must be some other people who are related to Governor Bradford. Turns out there are thousands of them. And I went online and I found out that Clint Eastwood and Hugh Hefner and Christopher Reeve and I believe Noah Webster all are descended from Governor Bradford. So they are probably, they're at least 11th cousins. They could be closer than that. And it's funny, my brother actually met Clint Eastwood. He used to work down by Carmel. As I said on the show, he could have shaken hands and said, "Hey, cuz, how you doing?"
That could have been one heck of a family reunion.
Yeah. And there are actually groups on social media for descendants of people who came over on the Mayflower. You know, does it mean a heck of a lot? Maybe not. But it was kind of an interesting thing. You want to have interesting things to say in your interview and when you're on the show. And I guess they love that one because they put that one first.
Yeah. I'm sure that certainly made his day.
Yeah.
And your co-contestants had some great stories, too. I think one of them had a story about getting lost in an active volcano in Hawaii on a field trip. And the other had a story about, was it playing catch with clumps of grass with a gorilla.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they have five stories to pick from. So hopefully the one that they pick is going to be the most interesting. Right. And, you know, you've gone through these stories in your interview process, too. So you don't want to pick dull things. Let's put it that way. So they've been vetted a little bit.
Yeah. For fans of the show and people who grew up with Jeopardy, like Greg and myself, when we think of Jeopardy, we cannot help but think of the longtime host, Alex Trebek, who sadly passed away not that long ago. What was it like for you to be on the set of Jeopardy and not have Alex be there?
Yeah, that was one of the disappointing parts. You know, I've watched the show since the Art Fleming days. My grandfather used to have it on in the 60s. I believe it was the 60s, might have been the 70s. And I surprised my grandfather when I started answering questions at like 4 or 5. But and I got them right, of course. Yeah, that was a bit disappointing to not meet Alex, especially when you walk in to the holding area and there's a life-size cutout of Alex. It's like, whoa, that was a little disconcerting. But it would have been nice to meet him. You are a bit of at a disadvantage, too, by having a guest host, because the buzzer is tied to the cadence of how somebody reads a question. You can't ring in until half a second after the host finishes a question. And with Alex, we'd heard him for years. We know what his cadence is like. We know when he finishes a question. So that's a disadvantage those of us who had the guest hosts had, is that, you know, you never get used to a guest host, really. And they never quite get used to reading the question. So that was a bit of a roll of the dice.
Yeah, come to think of it, you're right. Because I know there's been times where the TV's been on in the background and you just see the questions in your head. You're hearing Alex Trebek asking those particular questions. Wow. Well, Dennis, I was just thinking, maybe as a tribute to Alex, would you be interested in doing a little quick Jeopardy round with us?
Absolutely.
Okay. We don't have the budget that the show has, but...
But you might be able to afford a taco if you play your cards right.
Dennis Chase, the category is Toastmasters. Does that surprise you?
I'm shocked. Absolutely shocked.
Okay, Dennis Chase, you have the board.
I'll take Toastmasters for a taco, please.
The answer is, this talented individual founded Toastmasters in 1924.
I don't remember his full name, but I believe it's Smedley. Who is Smedley?
Ralph Smedley, that is correct.
Close call there, Dennis. Close call.
And contestant, please respond in the form of a question.
I'll take Toastmasters for two tacos.
The answer is...
In 2011, the Toastmasters rebrand introduced this new tagline for the organization.
Where is where leaders are made?
Wait, where is that what it would be?
No.
Well, you as a recent champion noted, it can be in the form of any question. So I could have said, why is where leaders are made? But I'll say, what is where leaders are made, in case you would prefer that for the recording.
Wow. So this is some more inside info. Would you, if you had said who is where leaders are made, you would actually get it correct?
That would be judged correctly. And a lot of people have raised objection. But, you know, you're on the game. That's one less thing to remember. So the current champion, who'll be back on in like a week, says, what is to everything? So what is Mother Teresa is a perfectly acceptable answer.
Fascinating.
You know, I noticed that and I always wondered that. Yeah.
One less thing he has to worry about. Perfectly okay with the rules of the game.
Wow.
Being on a budget for funds and being on a budget for time, we are going to enter the final Jeopardy category. And our category is Dynamic Duos. We'll be right back.
Ooh.
Final Jeopardy. Again, the category is Dynamic Duos. The answer is, this relatively unknown duo are the co-hosts of the Toastmasters podcast. Dennis,
This is a tough one. I'm going to take a wild stab at Ryan and Greg.
Congratulations, Dennis.
Congratulations, Dennis. And what was your wager?
All my tacos.
Oh, wow. So now you have a plethora of tacos. Let's just talk a little bit about your winnings on Jeopardy. Some people take vacations, some buy a new car, pay off debts. But Dennis, you had other plans for your winnings. Please tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this didn't make it onto the show. They actually tape a quick segment to send to your local TV station when you become a champion, and it's in that segment. Yeah, I knew going into the show that one of my older brothers was planning to move into my sister's. He's a Persian Gulf war vet of both Persian Gulf conflicts and has been having some trouble with quality of life issues and injuries that he had in the war. So I pledged that I would use some of my money to help with that transition of him joining their household. And I call it karma, call it a higher power or whatever. The day that they closed on that new house that they were all moving into was my first day of taping. And I'm glad that I was able to use some of my proceeds that I hadn't gotten yet because those 90 days weren't up yet. To help them. So we do have the Alex Trebek Memorial Bulkhead Door. In New England, a bulkhead is a door that goes right from the outside down into your cellar. And probably the Aaron Rodgers Memorial Circuit Breaker Box, even though Aaron Rodgers is still alive. Yeah, it was nice to be able to use some of the money in that way.
Well, that was so good of you and very, very meaningful and timely.
Yeah, for sure. Dennis, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your experience with us, and congratulations again. I'd like to invite you, if you would be open to hearing from listeners, let's say they're interested in, I don't know, some trivia about the Ming Dynasty or or dinosaurs or the 32nd president of the United States, what would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
For those trivia things, I'd say go on Wikipedia.
But good answer.
I think one of the best ways to get in touch with me, I am on Facebook. You will see that my Facebook picture has a certain game show set behind it, which you'll recognize from the blues and the purples. If someone wants to reach out to me, I am on Gmail. My email address is dchase, S-F-O, that's Sam Frank Oscar, like the airport in Northern California. At gmail.com. And one of the things I mentioned was having done AIDS education in South Africa. If you would like to get more information about that, the NAMES project is the AIDS Quilt. That's the agency that I went to South Africa with. But I wish all your Toastmasters good speeches and good luck. And hopefully they'll get a chance at some point to be on a game show and have fun like I did.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dennis. And let me also mention for our listeners who are Jeopardy fans, you might also want to check out Toastmasters podcast number 14 with Deb Gren, another Toastmaster who made it to the set of Jeopardy.
And folks, if you really enjoyed this episode, please make sure that you tell your friends. Not sure where you picked up the Toastmasters podcast, but you can pick it up on the Toastmasters International website, toastmasterspodcast.com, as well as all of your favorite services like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just certainly look for us everywhere, and please, please, please share the love with everyone. And I've got dibs on the tacos once the borders open.
Thanks again, Dennis. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.